Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Monday, August 31st, one of my favorite days on the calendar, and I am Scott Pianowski. We're just about the end of the baseball trading deadline, and it's been too long since I've talked to my good friend Jeff Erickson on this show. You know Jeff, Fantasy Hall of Famer, one of the pillars of RotoWire. He's been in the industry for a solid couple of decades. He has not been traded to the San Diego Padres, apparently. He's still working for RotoWire. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, what's going on, Scott? Fun day. It's also one of my favorite days. Plus, it's also my anniversary with my wife, too. So I have a very patient wife this year because not only is it trade deadline day, but I'm also doing an auction, football auction with you later tonight. So wild day, but it's a lot of fun. And you wake up and there's huge news in two sports. It's enough to keep it, plus playoff games in two other sports. It's enough to keep us going there pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited about that salary cap league we got going tonight. And just a reminder, and I'll probably say this again, fantasy football is open for business. I know the season's sneaking up on people. We're talking about, by the time you hear this show, probably 9 days between the listening of the program and the fantasy football season going. So if you've dragged your feet, I don't blame you. It's been a very unusual summer. Get back in the game, get the band back together, and join a league or two today. Want to see you on the fantasy football gridiron. Let's face it, look, we didn't know if baseball was going to take off. We didn't know if any sports were going to happen. We just saw some really great golf the last few weeks. The golf tournament last past weekend, the BMW was unbelievable. I think for the most part, the baseball season's been a success. I know it's not very trendy to say nice things about baseball. Everybody hates Rob Manfred and all this stuff, but there's been some bumps. There's been some less than ideal things. And, you know, the Cardinals didn't play for a long time. The Marlins didn't play for a long time. And I know that the owners probably just wanted to have a short season so they could get to their playoffs and get whatever money they could recoup. But I think if anybody sat out fantasy baseball this year, I think they'd regret it. I'm glad I'm playing. I'm glad I had 70 to 80% penetration than I normally would play. Just before we get into the trades, Jeff, just how satisfied are you with the season they were able to cobble together with baseball this year?
Pretty satisfied, actually. I mean, it's hard when you're already out of it, like in 4 weeks, and you think, oh, I don't really have much of a chance. But I see 10-point gains happen every day. You know, it still can happen. We're in a league together, 16-team league, Yahoo Friends and Family. I've seen that movement a lot just in the last couple of days. So it's still possible to happen. I think some things are kind of cool that are happening. I mean, the Marlins are making go-for-it trades. I think that's great. You know, I don't not in love with an 8-team playoff, eight teams in each league. I don't like making it the NBA or the NHL in terms of playoffs, but it's a weird year. I get it. And I think in a way it's a little bit more equitable that a decent team can still recover after a bad month.
Yeah, it's funny. We'll pivot to some of the trades and later we'll have a discussion about fantasy trading and where it's at and maybe some tips that can make you a better fantasy trader. Wasn't a lot of trading in my leagues, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. But let's first start about trade deadline, Major League Baseball, and obviously the Padres are the dominant story. They made a bunch of trades. Your Reds made a couple of trades. The Marlins are involved. The Blue Jays, the Buffalo/Toronto Blue Jays have made a couple of moves. So it's interesting. A lot of times these trade deadlines are just, the Yankees annex somebody and the the Astros or the Dodgers, you have been players. You know, we saw the Dodgers have brought Verlander 1 year. They brought him at the deadline. They made a move for Greinke 1 year. It's just cool to see new blood. The Padres are a great story. They have all this young talent. And, Tatis is a monster, maybe the MVP this year. He's probably going to be the fantasy number one player next year in a lot of leagues. And shout out to Ron Chandler, who said he should have gone number one overall this year. He was saying that before the season started. What a great thing to be right about. But it's just fun to see different teams. Let's try to figure out what are the winners and losers, whether it's teams, whether it's players, whether, I haven't noticed a lot of actionable advice to this. I looked at the recently added players on Yahoo Fantasy Baseball, and I don't see a lot of players like, oh yeah, there's a trade deadline bump. So I'm not sure that much value has changed in a way that we can maybe apply it and make a pickup, although I may be missing somebody. I haven't figured out the Kansas City closing situation. Arizona traded Archie Bradley to the Reds, so maybe they have a new closer, but their bullpen's on fire right now. I just don't want to touch the bad fire. I don't want to touch it. But let's just talk about some of the winners. Who came out from this trade deadline in baseball maybe better than they were 48 hours ago?
Let's go with your hometown nine. Talk about Bobby Dalbec. He's got the call up after the Mitch Moreland trade. Clear path to playing time. Michael Chavis is actually going to play more outfield, especially now that they trade away Kevin Pillar and Andrew Benintendi is hurt. I think Dahlbeck's going to play on a regular basis. And this is a guy maybe a couple of years ago, it looked like he was blocked when Chavis got the call last year and was hitting bombs. Everybody was like, whoa, well, forget about Dahlbeck. He's not even hitting for power. Now Dahlbeck's got that chance. He's healthy. He had, you know, a lengthy stint on the COVID IL. Took a long time to get that second negative test. The Red Sox have nothing but playing time right now. And I think that's going to be something where he's a guy that clearly benefits. And first base hasn't been that strong this year. So quietly, you know, it may not be the most obvious winner, but it's one that's actionable. You can go pick him up in a lot of leagues.
Definitely actionable. I'm going to check. He is 7% rostered in Yahoo right now. So 93% of you are going to have an option on Dahlbeck, and he's going to play. I mean, and that's been one of my things I've pivoted to. This has always been important in fantasy, but never so, more so than 2020. You got to get a team on the field, whether it's postponements or guys who are hurt or whatever. Playing time has never been more important to me than it is this season, because there's been unusual circumstance. Again, the Marlins didn't play for a couple of weeks. It felt like the Cardinals didn't play for a month. I know it wasn't quite that pronounced. And of course, now they're pressed into the doubleheaders and stuff like that, which is a kind of a tricky adjustment in its own right. But yeah, the fact that Dahlbeck should have his name on the lineup card, I think, makes him a winner. I'm going to say this is kind of low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to say Mike Clevinger's a winner, just because I think the situation went bad for him in Cleveland. And you could say that's maybe on Clevinger, but he's going from a contending decent team to another contending team, maybe even a better team. And although San Diego isn't the pitcher-friendly park it used to be, it's still where you want your pitchers. It's a pretty good place. I guess you could steer him away from Colorado, although it seems like every time I steer somebody away from Colorado, they pitch a gem. You know, Framber Valdez pitched really well there. Chris Paddock couldn't get anybody out, it seemed like, for 2 weeks. And then he goes to Colorado, and he was great over the weekend. But I think Clevinger gets a change of scenery when he needed it. And we've seen that's kind of what Cleveland does. I mean, when it went sour for Trevor Bauer, they couldn't wait to get rid of him. I thought that what they got back for Clevinger was kind of strange. They got a piece trade. It's one of those trades that if it was made in the fantasy league, everybody would have gotten mad about it, because it was kind of like 6-2s for an 8. But if I'm a Mike Clevinger owner, I think I'm just glad he's just in a – not. I'm not pinning blame on anybody here, but I think if I own Clevinger, I'd be glad that he's on the Padres right now.
Yeah, I think it's a fresh start for him for sure. And, you know, the Indians, apparently there's a big problem in the clubhouse with him. And he, you know, Zach Plesac was the original offender. He's the guy that had the horrible six-minute video. But Clevinger's the guy that lied. He was the one sitting in that meeting, you know, saying, you know, not saying that he did it. And all of a sudden it comes out, oh, he was with him too, took that flight with him, and they felt betrayed. I think that was like that extra layer there, and maybe one of the reasons why we saw that and why they're so upset. They had that big, you know, clubhouse meeting, and after it did go well, he and Plesac got sent down to the alternate camp. I think that was pretty much a showcase start for him. They didn't really want him in his long-term plans. It's weird for the Indians, though. I mean, they're in first place right now, and to trade away a guy that is, you know, we view as a top 10 fantasy starter in baseball, top 10 starting pitcher, and not get like a top 5 prospect back in return. I mean, the Padres gave a lot of different, you know, interesting guys, and maybe they've scouted them differently than we have. And not maybe, they have. And I'm sure that they value certain guys a little bit more than we do. But no Mackenzie Gore, no Luis Patino, none of the other top guys in their organization went to Cleveland in this deal. I think the Padres had to do it. I'll throw another winner, though, is Cal Quantrill going back over to the Indians. I think he gets a chance to start for them. And I think it might even be right away. You know, Tristan McKenzie's in there right now, but I think we've seen the Adam Plutko experiment, and it's not going that great. Wasn't going that great. If they're truly cool on Plesac, well, he may spend the rest of the season in the alternate site no matter how well he pitched. Quantrill is having a good year, actually. He just didn't have a role. 18 Ks and 17 and a third. He had his moments of good times last year with the Padres in the rotation. Had a couple bad starts against the Dodgers and Rockies late that really torched his ratios. But I was on him a little bit last year. I even like used a Dollar Days auction bid on him in the XFL, that draft I do every October at First Pitch Arizona. Held on to him. And now I'm pretty happy with this. You know, Cleveland's got like the Cleveland pitching magic, the St. Louis Cardinals devil magic, whatever it is. You know, some teams are good at development, and I think this is a good spot for him to land.
I like that call on Quantrill, and a couple other things in his favor. And by the way, only 4% rostered in Yahoo, so he is widely available When Lucas Giolito threw the no-hitter last week against the Pirates, I talked about as great as Giolito was that night, and isn't it awesome that you can have no stake in a no-hitter but still feel tense when you watch the last couple of outs just because you become emotionally invested in it. I like Giolito anyway. He's got awesome stuff. I think he's a really interesting guy. But I made a point of just the Central was the place to be this year, and I looked at all the team OPSs, and this is like 4 or 5 days old. The White Sox were among the leaders in team OPS, and then every other team of the 9 other Central Division teams were either middle of the pack or in the bottom 10.
Yep.
So I know it's hard to take the Cardinals stats seriously because they're catching up to everybody else. But the point is, you know, the Tigers strike out all the time. The Pirates have a bunch of guys hitting 190. This is where you want to go. So in the case of Quantrill, you might think, oh, well, I hate to see him leave San Diego. Well, maybe he's going to the division. And that's been one of my actionable points this year, even if you don't apply it to Quantrill. It's just there's just so many bad offenses, it looks like, in the Central Divisions. Yeah, Pittsburgh is a great example of it. I'm trying to attack those teams whenever I can.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I do that. To your point, a couple of things. The Indians, they have allowed – their runs allowed per game, not ERA, but runs allowed is 3.00, which is just insane.
Ridiculous.
To your point about the Cardinals, they've played 25 games so far. They're playing the Reds to start this week. They played 34 games. You know, go get Cardinal bats right now, by the way. I mean, arms, they're going to play, you know, same number of days. So, that you know, you don't get an advantage there except for maybe the relievers a little bit. But, you know, go get, you know, trade for Paul Goldschmidt if your league allows for trades right now. Because, you know, you're getting that extra boost. You're getting – that's the one guy you know is going to probably play 32 of those games.
Talk about winners. Are going to be a little snarky here. I think the AL East and NL East – by proxy, hitters benefit because Robbie Ray's coming over. Robbie Ray has torched. He has ruined everybody's National League only hopes for winning a league, and now he's gone to Toronto. Fred Zinke was basically hiding for cover when the Ray news was landing down, and I'm sure Rob Silver probably had something snarky to say. I just haven't seen it yet. So if you were in an American League only league, would you have the nerve to bid on Robbie Ray?
No. In fact, I was pretty strident about saying I'm not going to have Robbie Ray on any of my teams because I just can't stand watching him pitch. The walks are just a killer. I just don't want to. I know the strikeout upside's there, but he was in a pretty good ballpark to pitch in. Now, granted, facing the Dodgers, facing the Rockies, not so great. Now facing the Padres, not so great. So maybe that kind of hurt some of that, but you really want to see that against the Yankees? You want to see that against the Red Sox? They can still hit. You know, he doesn't get the benefit from that, the Red Sox pitching staff. You don't want the Rays, meanwhile, are scoring a ton of runs. You want, and they take walks. That's, you know, Robbie Ray versus the Rays. I mean, there's all sorts of confusion, plus the walk potential is so high. Don't want any of that. No thanks.
And the park has been an offensive park, this Buffalo Stadium. So it could be a dangerous place. Somebody on Twitter, I forget, I apologize for not remembering who it was, said, oh, great. The Blue Jays have finally replaced Ricky Romero. That's not a direct Robbie Ray comp, but I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, off the top of your head. So kudos to you, anonymous person on Twitter, who I can't remember. I thought that was a funny line. Let's talk about some of the losers in the trade deadline. And all politics are local. I'll talk about a couple guys in my Friends and Family League team who have been really useful for me. Mitch Moreland, as we talked about, Dalbec coming to playing time. You know, Moreland goes to San Diego with 27 other players, feels like. And Austin Nola goes from Seattle to San Diego. I know this might be anecdotal, but sometimes I think of something I call the Shane Green problem, where Shane Green had a bunch of saves for the Tigers. Then he gets traded to Atlanta. And the moment he hit the tarmac, he couldn't get anybody out. What, we saw Tommy Malone over the weekend, right? He get traded to Atlanta, and then all of a sudden he was throwing batting practice. That could be anything. I mean, it could be nerves, it could be the strike zone, it could be guys just did a good job of hitting.
Reversion to form, whatever.
Sure. But in the case of Nola and Moreland, I knew that they were going to play for the teams that they were on. Seattle was going to play Nola every day, qualified multiple positions. They actually traded for another catcher, right? I mean, there could be a playing time crunch with Nola. I'm not convinced Moreland will necessarily play as much as he did in Boston, although he's generally playing against right-handed, you know, the strong side of a platoon. I guess with the DH now, maybe I'm less worried about Moreland. But when I see somebody like Austin Nola, who has a career year at age 30, it's for a Seattle team that has never contended, not for 1 minute. Sorry about that, Mariners fans, but that's just the truth. Any concern that this could pumpkin now that he's on a contending team and maybe the playing time could be at risk for Austin Nola?
You know, I think he'll be okay. I think it really hurts Castro more than it hurts Nola. You know, Castro's the guy that, you know, when you play the wait on the catcher's game and you want to take the 25th catcher, oh, Castro still plays a lot. I'll take him. That's not true anymore. He's probably the backup, I think. He's probably superior defensively to Nola. That might be a point in his favor. I think it's, I think, you know, the top guy on my list, the loser list, is Francisco Mejia. You know, he's hurt right now, but he wasn't hitting. This was this big-time prospect. You know, everyone thought, oh, this guy's going to be one of those elite prospects, a catcher that can rake. He's barely a catcher to begin with, and he can't rake right now. And now he's hurt, and they traded for two catchers above him. He's gone, you know, at least for this year. But yeah, I mean, Nola, you know, you always be aware of the 30-year-old breakout, right? I mean, that's one of the things for the long term, a trade will do that. That might trigger that. Yeah, I think there is kind of probably be some regression anyhow. And as you like to say, regress to what? But I think probably a little less playing time, probably a little bit of regression. Still, I'd take him over all but like 15 catchers in baseball, maybe 10.
Talk about another loser, not a loser in general, but a fantasy loser. You know, Colorado made a move for Kevin Pillar, and I thought that was a smart move. I mean, look, he swings at anything. He doesn't have a great on-base percentage, but he's an outstanding defensive player, and I think he would make a lot of sense roaming Coors Field outfield. But I always assume that the Rockies are just going to screw around with Garrett Hampson as soon as he goes into one of those 1-for-6 slumps, because that's just what the Rockies do. So I didn't even really look that closely to the nuts and bolts of the roster, but I just assume that the Garrett Hampson dreams that I have are now dead because Kevin Pillar is just another mouth to feed in this Colorado lineup. Do you share my pessimism that the Hampson dream is now dead?
Maybe. I'm more pessimistic about Romel Tapia, about Sam Hilliard. Mm-hmm. I think those are the guys that get hurt more. You know, quietly, you know who's really not been so great for them for the second year in a row is Danny Murphy. This is a guy that, you know, zero pop. And I've really been kind of disappointed in him. I had him as like maybe a bounce back potential, slugging 383. Hampson's not any better, by the way. Hampson's got a 704 OPS. I think maybe part of this is these Rockies prospects, they either stagnate or that they're not that great to begin with. Might be the latter. If you look at their farm system, almost all their minor league teams play in hitter friendly parks, too. I think we kind of inflate some of these guys.
It's possible. I think Murphy, I wouldn't be surprised if he retired at the end of the year. I mean, OPS plus nowhere near 100 the last two seasons. I think a lot of us thought if Murphy crapped out this year, it'd be because he got hurt. We thought he'd be good if he was on the field, but he's all of a sudden looking pretty old at an age where in a position where it's pretty easy to fill now. You know, I mean, he's basically first base DH now. He's no longer getting that second base value. So I think you're onto something with him, and you know, and maybe just Hampson wasn't that good of a prospect. I'm just seduced by what he did in September last year, where he was like a top 20 player. He had category juice, he had power, he was willing to run, he had good real estate in a lineup. Obviously, the Coors Field is a cheat code. Talk about somebody else who might have been a fantasy loser over the last couple of days.
Well, just happened right before we got started. Archie Bradley got traded to the Reds. Now, maybe he closes for them. Maybe it's Raisel Iglesias that closes that gets hurt instead. One of those two, we're losing, you know, closers, finding guys that we know have the job, it's really hard to do. And both those guys had the job, period. I mean, there was no ambiguity. They were their team's respective closers. Now we're going to be playing, we're going to be chasing saves again, which is just awful. And meanwhile, you look at the Rockies bullpen, I can't find a clear winner. I know Gray from Razzball, who is like a bot and picks up everybody right away, even though we only have 25 moves, still somehow managed to snipe Hector Rondon right away. I got an alert on that, but maybe that's the guy. But point is, he and Ginkle have been a huge disappointment. So I'm not really racing to the wire for either of those, but I guess when you need saves, you need saves. But right now, I'm assuming it's Bradley that's the one that's hurt, and that hurts me pretty badly in one of the NFBC leagues, I've got Bradley as my main closer, and he hadn't pitched in a week until the other day when he came in the eighth inning and it didn't end well, and he hasn't had a save opportunity in like 2 weeks. Now he may not have another one.
Do you have a favorite reliever to target right now who might be widely available in, say, a Yahoo League? Rosenthal was traded to San Diego. And I look, it's funny, I look at this Kansas City bullpen, what's left over, and all these guys have great numbers. I mean, Stammon, I know he walks too many guys, but 28 strikeouts in 14 and two-thirds innings. He's got an ERA of 0.61. He's got a, the whip is 130 because he's got all the walks. Scott Barlow has really good numbers. Holland's had a decent season. Maybe Jesse Hahn is finally healthy. He got a rogue save the other day. I'm not sure. Maybe there's just too many guys here, and they've kind of been committee-driven all season. I don't know if you saw a leftover in Arizona that made sense for you, if any of the Kansas City guys made sense. I was wondering if Toronto would maybe make a move because they've had some attrition. They've had a lot of injuries in their bullpen. Is there anybody, just wide-scale relief pitcher, that, that you think gets the Jeff Erickson stamp of approval right now?
No, they're all dart throws. I mean, Gregory Soto, maybe.
Detroit, sure.
I think there was some chatter, though, that maybe instead they'll give the job back to Jimenez when he gets right or when he's ready or something of that nature. And again, Detroit, they, I mean, they're 500 right now, which is actually pretty darn good. They just swept the Twins. They're like, you know, funny, there's seven teams in the AL that are pretty much clinched. But you know, the last spot might be still in play. That's about it. I just picked up Greg Holland, though. And friends and family. And the reason for that is he pitched the ninth the other day. It was a tie game. But, you know, Stammon pitched the seventh. Now, maybe it's just a relief ace sort of thing. They didn't trade away Holland, which I was kind of surprised. But then, actually, I'm not surprised because he's not great. But Holland struck out the side the last time he was in there. It's not a ringing endorsement. It's a steal a couple saves moves.
Maybe it's confirmation bias, but I wonder if teams are mindful that the last couple of times teams added Greg Holland as a piece, he immediately just threw up all over himself. And you know, maybe they're just worried about Greg Holland's OPS.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
It's sorry, possible, I had to throw that in here. Our mutual friend Todd Zola was moaning about, in a good-natured way, I should say, because moaning sounds pejorative, but he was saying he had the AL-only hammer in a league with he had the most resources for a free agent. Nobody was coming over. And then very close to the deadline, ringing Jonathan Villar, the much traveled Jonathan Villar. You know, he did his Mike Piazza stop with the Marlins. Mm-hmm. Now he's traded back to the American League to Toronto. Any interest? Obviously, Villar is owned in every league, but what do you think about him going to Toronto?
I mean, it's good for him and good for the Jays while Bichette's out, and they can just slot him over at third base after that. You know, they don't really have a solid third baseman still. So the funny thing is, although they have, Travis Shaw isn't bad, but in fact, he was hitting .300 the other day. So I don't know if he necessarily replaced him, but he's going to play shortstop now, and VR can play everywhere, right? That's somewhat part of his appeal. Play some second, play some short, play some outfield. Maybe let Biggio go back to the outfield, put him at second base once Bichette comes back. They've got alternatives. You know, if you have the hammer in the AL, boom, use it on this for sure.
Yeah, I love adding. I love my friends and family roster has a bunch of guys who have multiple positions, and then I can just play positionless fantasy and just put the best team on the field.
Yeah,
I can massage those games played limits as I need to. You know, if I'm heavy on one position but lighter on another one, I can steer people where I want them to go. So it's nice. Toronto gets VR, qualifies at both middle infield positions. Maybe he'll play some third base. Maybe he'll play some outfield. So he may pick up another position before long. I want to mention just two other guys. These guys aren't tied to the trade deadline, although I wouldn't have been surprised if either one of them were traded, but I guess the deadline's come and gone. With the San Francisco Park playing different this year, and with San Francisco having a two-game series in Colorado that starts on Tuesday, I want people to know that Brandon Belt is only rostered in 28% of Yahoo leagues, and Evan Longoria, who's been sizzling of late, is 16%. Rostered in Yahoo. So if nothing else, pick these guys up for the Colorado series. And the park has been totally different. You know, Brandon Belt was always a guy we said, hey, what if he's in a different park? If only he didn't play in a park where everything's knocked down to right field. They closed those archways. The ball's flying like crazy. I don't know if this will be a year-over-year change because they're not committing yet to what they'll do next year. But I think Belt and Longoria, especially Belt, are approved for the rest of the fantasy season.
Yeah, Belt, he was hurt at the beginning of the year, of course he was. But we've always said, you know, one of these years he's going to put it together. They moved the fences in. Our mutual friend Mike Salfino was talking him up in draft season back in March about that. And, you know, I took a couple of late round stabs at him there. I think, like you said, you know, roster him for Colorado, roster him against righties. I mean, we can't emphasize enough, first base isn't that stacked. You go ahead and use them there. It's pretty useful. Longo, yeah. I mean, it was just a couple of years ago. We were like, oh, how could the Rays trade away Evan Longoria? He's their franchise player, literally. I mean, he's like the guy that was like the shining beacon on the hill. Oh, they even did it right. They locked him up on a long-term deal. They showed faith in him when he was a rookie, and it worked out, and it's a team-friendly deal. Good for them. And we root for team-friendly deals all the time when it's not even our team. It's kind of a weird thing to do. And then all of a sudden, he was done. And now maybe he wasn't done. He just was hurt. And that, you know, keep in mind, I'm not making a one-to-one comparison, but remember how many people thought Chipper Jones was done because he was hurt so much? And then all of a sudden he had a 4-year stretch where he was healthy and boom, he was awesome again. Now, boom, Longoria's decent again. And you know,
it's funny how that works, right? Yeah. I mean, remember Paul Molitor was injury prone until he wasn't. Frank Gore, it was a guy who had had a million problems with his knee. Now he's like the oldest player in NFL history.
Fred Taylor.
It feels like that. Yeah. Fred Taylor, sure. Fragile Fred.
Yep.
I remember one of my first things at Yahoo, at RotoWire when we were working together, is I called him Fragile Fred. You said, where'd you get that? What's this Fragile Fred stuff? I said, everybody calls him that. I made you do a search on a Yahoo search probably, and a couple things came up, and you relented. You said, okay, Fragile Fred can stay, but I'm sure at that day was probably the last moment I could call him that, because then he changed his diet, and he got better right. about conditioning, and maybe just got a little bit luckier too. Let's be honest about that. I mean, sometimes guys – we always ask that question when somebody's hurt a lot. Is he injury prone or is he accident prone? You know, is Will Fuller a bad pick because he's going to get hurt because there's something wrong with Will Fuller? Or has he just stepped in a ditch a few times and some year that's not going to happen and he's a screaming value? It can be a difficult thing to figure out sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. I would compare Longo to Kyle Seager. You know, like Seager was banged up for a couple of years. Yeah, he's kind of cooled down some from his early start, as one would expect, but 819 OPS still is the end result, 15 and 19 walks to strikeouts. I'll take that. You know, he didn't get traded. You know, too much money on his contract, I'm sure, but, you know, that's sort of the comp you can maybe look at. Another guy that might have a dead cat bounce, just homered while we were talking, was Justin Upton. With Brian Goodwin dealt, he's going to play again a lot.
Congratulations, by the way. Your Cincinnati Reds getting Brian Goodwin. I'm sure that has you, I would say, looking at prices for playoff tickets, but there's no tickets to buy. But your Cincinnati Reds are certainly looking like a playoff team. So, okay, the trading deadline came and went in MLB. The trading deadline also came and went in the Friends and Family League. And I'm going to tell you right now, there were two trades, not at the deadline, the entire season, whatever 4 or 5 weeks means. I made a trade with Frank Schwab. Where I traded Gleyber Torres for Patrick Corbin maybe a week or two ago, not realizing that Corbin, his velocity was as bad off as it was. Now since then, Gleyber Torres has gotten hurt. I feel kind of bad about that. I just hope Corbin just stays healthy and gets me some strikeouts, whatever. And then Ted Bell, man of international mystery, has been in a bunch of our leagues together. I think he's in the football league we're doing tonight.
Yep.
We had a really nice, long, old-school email exchange. I was trying to get you Darvish. He was trying to get Jonathan VR. We both agreed that Darvish was more valuable than VR. We danced around different options. It was always respectful. I may have thrown him an offer or two that he said no to. He threw me an offer or two that I said no to. Eventually, I came up with an offer. I'm like, yeah, I think this might be it. And I forget what the exact three for three is. And that's not even the point here, is that you don't care about my trade. The point is,
I
mean,
I care.
You, the listener, doesn't care necessarily about the specifics. But here's the thing. It just made me think that when I first got into fantasy, I would always lead my league in trades. And I guess that's still true. I had two in the Friends and Family League, so I led the league again. But it made me wonder, is trading dead? Why don't we trade anymore? Is this – I didn't notice any big trades going down in my Tout Wars league. I tried to shop Nolan Arenado in labor, and I didn't even get anybody come up to me. Now, I just sent out the introductory email. I didn't go secondary with some targets, but I thought just saying Arenado in a crowded theater might help. So where are we with fantasy trading? Has it become – I think it's a lot less prevalent than it used to be. Is that – I know some leagues at the NFBC, you can't even do it. Where are you right now at trading? And then after we talk about that, let's try to give people tips for they can apply to football or you know, fantasy baseball next year. But right now, is this a trend that we're kind of getting away from the fantasy trade?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of it's a lot of things. One, it's a weird year. It's 2 months,
of course.
A 2 month season, and a trade deadline that's 1 month into the season. It's sometimes hard to like commit to making a deal this quickly. Like, oh, I'm just figuring out what my team is. Oh, wait, trade deadline's gone. too, I saw your email about Arenado, but in Labor, the league that we're in together there, I'm fine in my hitting categories. I'm hurting in starting pitching. So I was like, yeah, I'm interested. Because you always make fair trades. You and I have a history of making trades together, especially in this particular, in friends and family. We have we've made a lot of trades together. It just didn't work out this year. Ted also emailed me, and he actually DM'd me, and he made me a couple offers. It just didn't work out. The guys that he was offering, I just wasn't interested in. But you know, he was trying to churn, right? And he had like six guys on the IL, like this on day one too. So he was, he had a lot to kind of change up there. So that kind of made things different. But in Tout Wars, I made a big deal with Jason Collette. I traded for JD Martinez, traded away Tyler Glasnow, pretty big deal. And so far he's ahead on that one there. And I'm hoping that hit by pitch on JD yesterday isn't serious on the hand, but we'll see about that. In XFL, a keeper league, I made like five trades, but now that's the thing. It's a keeper league. There's future considerations here. You know, I thought I had a team that I can contend. It didn't get out of the blocks well. I had, Juan Soto didn't play for the first 10 days, and yeah, he'll make up some games, but I started off way behind. I had Osuna in that league as well, and, get your way behind in saves. You know, just things happen like that. And like, okay, well, I can only keep 15 guys. I've got more than 15 keepers. These five guys have value this year. I can't keep them. Let's make a deal. So that happened. I think the big thing you need to do, make an offer first. And you usually do that. I think when you're presented with an offer in front of you, it spurs the conversation a lot more. If you are yearning, itching to trade, don't be afraid to make that first offer and make it a fair one. Don't do this. I know you talk about this all the time. Don't try to give me the three spare parts, three quarters equals a dollar trade, because that just ends a conversation. It's got to be a legit trade that you'll feel it a little bit if you make the deal.
Right. No, that's definitely the first important thing, to get into the mindset of who your trading partner is and what they need. Mm-hmm. And the greatest thing, the easiest trades are if you can identify somebody you have a good history with, somebody you have generally an understanding that's level and built on respect. And then it's like, okay, I have an excess here. You have an excess there. We have alternate needs. So sometimes trades can come together just because you match up really well, and yep. The friends and family, one reason why Ted and I were eager to trade is that he was already out of pickups. So for him to shape his roster, he needed to look into a trade. In fact, he even talked about, this was kind of cool, he talked about me maybe trading him some transactions to give him a few extra bites of the apple, which, be creative, trade fab. Trade something, don't trade a piece of pizza, don't trade a case of beer, trade something that is tied to the league, but think in creative ways. You think about the hockey league that we're in together, where I came up with the idea of making trades that were conditional on where somebody finished in the standings.
Right.
So it's like, okay, yeah, that's always fun. And the whole league has copied that, and we all do that. It just gives you another way to finish off a trade. And I'll give one other tip for trading. I've said this before. I may have even said it last week, but you're trying to solve the category puzzle. You're not trying to, quote unquote, win the trade. You're not trying to make a trade that has to make sense out of context, that has to look good on Twitter. You're just trying to manipulate the categories to your advantage. And that means you might make a trade that people outside your league might look at and go, that looks kind of screwy. But everything's contextual. Everything's about your league. You're just trying to do whatever helps you categorically. And it doesn't matter if it would make sense a month ago or if it wouldn't make sense to somebody who doesn't have access to your standings page. Just manipulate the categories and get them where you need to go. And don't worry so much about, how does this trade look in a vacuum?
Right. And no, you made one point that's really a great point, is know what your trade partner is looking for. Don't waste their time. Make sure it's something they would want to do. I was in a league once where, I was clearly selling for the trading for the future. And this team was trying to do, it's a score sheet league, and they're trying to buy now. And they're like, well, we also have to, we have to have something for the future too. I'm like, no, I'm giving up the present. This is the point. I am trading, you can't win both parts of that trade. It's just, don't insult me like that. And they're like, well, we got this. If you see this, if you look at it this way, no. Then when you have to throw a three paragraph explanation of why it makes sense for your trade partner, it's probably not a good deal. Let it make sure they can see it. Don't try to be like, oh, I'm going to pull a fast one on by lawyering it away. And I say that as a recovering attorney. Don't try to win in legalese.
Right. And I think sometimes the more you try to argue the trade as why the other person should do it, I think you bump them offline sometimes. Just present something simple okay, I think this makes sense. I, you know, with Teddy, he needed stolen bases. I needed an ace pitcher. We both agreed that Darvish was worth more than VR. And then it took a while for us to figure out how to balance that out. But at least we came very quickly to a consensus. And that's another thing you do here. Find something you agree on.
Yep.
Okay. We both hashed out what we thought Darvish and VR were worth. And because we were able to come to that quickly, that helped set up the rest of the trade. Then it was about finding what balanced that out. But at least we came to a consensus. Now, if he thought Darvish was the best pitcher in baseball, or if I thought Jonathan VR was like a top 10 offensive player, then maybe things would have fallen apart quickly. But because right. we came to a point that we could agree on, I think that helped us get something done. And so anyway, it was nice. It was a throwback. Trading is fun. You mentioned keeper leagues. I mean, obviously keeper and dynasty formats are more geared towards trading because the people who can't win know that they really need to get set up for the future versus if you can't win the friends and family league other than pride, there's really nothing else to play for. But it's still fun to execute a trade. And I'll admit, yeah. I was really clued into the first Darvish trade, Darvish start. He pitched great, made me feel good. I hope VR plays well for him, but it's nice to do an equitable, and I'm not out to screw people. I'm just out to make right. trades that look good for both of us because I want to come back to that person and make a trade next month or next year or the next sporting season, whatever it is.
Yeah. And I also think trades are a little bit down this year too, because there's everything else going on. If you're mm-hmm. a hockey fan, if you're a hoops fan, yeah, that distracts you some. Of course, football season's coming up. One of the things that I I've said this before is that makes you such a good analyst is you do multiple sports and you're doing well. I mean, you know your hoops, you know your hockey, you know your football and your baseball. Well, it's hard to wear all those hats. Oh, and golf too. You have the best all time record in our golf league. So I mean that's a lot of things to pay attention to all at once. And I think that one thing. Some people have an advantage over us is they live, breathe, eat, sleep that one league or two leagues or three leagues, whatever the case is, or one sport. You know, I and don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love doing multiple sports. I'm a huge fan of every sports. Why not be an analyst and play in these leagues? But it does take its toll in terms of time.
I appreciate that. And I can send the same compliment back to you. I mean, you play multiple sports, you're a really good competitor in multiple sports. And I don't think it's easy to do, especially at this time of the sporting calendar, right? When everything right. starts to intersect, especially once baseball and football intersect. Because football's the biggest fantasy sport. And
yeah.
By the way, I pause this podcast for a minute and go join a Yahoo Fantasy Football League. Thank you. Welcome back. But I appreciate that. I'm always going to be interested. We're both, I don't play it for fantasy, although they do have it for fantasy. I'm a big European soccer fan. I know you are as well. Not to mention one of the finest soccer coaches in the greater Southern California area, right?
I'm the best coach for my daughter. How about that for AYSO? But no, I love it. Coaching my kids has made me want to learn more about the game. It's made me kind of dig in. I've watched way more soccer than I used to, and I love it. It's a great sport, and it helps that you and I, our respective teams played each other on Saturday. Congratulations on the win. But you're still an Arsenal fan, right?
I am, although it really sank a lot after when Wenger left and then they started yeah. to lose players that I really cared about. Because I got in because I loved his philosophy. You know, let's ticky-tack our way down the field and walk the ball into the goal. I just love this aesthetic that they strive to play with. Set piece. I don't like goals off set pieces. I know they're important. Mm-hmm. And shout out to my friend John Dalton, whose daughter is a rising soccer star in Texas, and she takes all their penalty kicks, and she's just deadly. She scores like every freaking time. It's unbelievable how good she is. Plus, she's left footed, which nice. I always think throws off the goalie sometimes. Did you know anything about soccer when you got into coaching? How much did you know about the sport when you dipped into it?
I mean, I watched every World Cup cycle, pretty much the national team. I didn't have a club that I followed. Mm-hmm. And now I have three. I root for the Galaxy, I root for Liverpool, and I root for Dortmund as well. And so they're Dortmund's just such a fun team to watch. Endlessly fascinating. Doesn't apply to defense, but they're super fun to watch. And no, I didn't know a ton about it. And now I feel like I'm behind the curve for some people because I played 2 years and I was terrible. And if you like slow and no instincts for the game, I'm your guy, but I'm getting there. I play now too. I play.
Do you really? I didn't know that.
AYSO has. If you volunteer in our region, they have an adult league, and we play on Sunday nights. And subsequently, drink in the parking lot league afterward. But you know, I think I've won the most improved award like 3 years running because I started at ground zero. But no, we don't have those awards. But point is, I felt myself getting better. It's made me a better coach because I have more instincts now. Because you know, standing on the sidelines, going through training is one thing. Actually playing it and seeing, oh, that's actually possible. Oh, this is how you do it. Oh, yeah, that it makes you a better coach too.
I want to mention just one more thing before we get to our San Diego Padres draft in celebration to the Padres dominating the 2020 Major League Baseball trade deadline. Scott Pianowski in the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast talking to my good friend Jeff Erickson of RotoWire. I just want to do a quick flyby on your fantasy baseball team, on your friends and family team. Nelson Cruz is 40, and he has, I'm just really quickly looking at his career scan, he has the best OPS of his career this year following the best OPS of his career last year. His two best seasons by OPS are the last two seasons. Hit the most home runs in the 2010s. I have him on a couple of teams. I didn't prioritize. And when somebody gets to that age, you just don't know when the other shoe's going to drop, or you know, even just one shoe's going to drop. Mm-hmm. Nelson Cruz is as good as he's ever been. What the heck do we do with this guy next year? He's going to be 41 years old, but he's going to be coming off another monster season. Just give us a sense of where things are going for Cruz.
He's going down the David Ortiz career path. You know, he always gets downed because he's old, because he has the PED rumors. And in his case, he actually had a suspension, and because he's DH only, and he always gets discounted. But there's no sign of any regression. The skills haven't diminished. Now, can he stay on the field? That's a question mark. That it seems he's good for an injury or every once in a while, but yeah, that's take a number. He's not playing the field. That works in our favor. And Yahoo Friends and Family, we have two utility spots. So that's not even really a reason to discount him. I knew I kind of had to reach for him when I took him at 46 overall, or 49 overall, excuse me, because I know he's not coming back. And I was like, and my numbers had him as the best available player at the time. I was like, okay, I want this guy. This is before we knew about the schedule. This is before we knew, oh, third of my games are going to be against Detroit and Kansas City. Funny how that turns out. They've been swept at both Kansas City and Detroit recently. But at any rate, and their offense isn't that great. They're only averaging 4.4 runs per game, less than the Tigers for that matter. But yeah, the skills are still there. Next year, I'll be in on him again. In fact, there are leagues I took Matt Olson over him in one league, and I really regret it. I lose a little. That was an NFBC league where I only had one utility spot, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, give me him again. Until he shows that he's like, okay, he's striking out way more, or he's slower. But I mean, everything's there. All the indicators are there.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, he left Texas, and people thought, well, you know, Baltimore might not be as good for him. He was great in Baltimore. Well, now he's in Safeco. It's going to fall apart now. It didn't happen. Well, now he's old. He's in Minnesota. So I'm, you know, this can't continue. Well, he's actually better. I like that David Ortiz comparison. Maybe Nelson Cruz is just the right-handed Ortiz, a late bloomer, and somebody mm-hmm. who's going to be good until the day he decides to retire. Okay, so we're going to transition to our San Diego Padres draft. This is in honor of the Padres ruling the 2020 trade deadline. Enable me to joke about Leonard Fournette signing with the Padres. thank you, Twitter, for taking that viral. Also, thank you to the Jamoke who said, I stole that from somebody who has 700 followers who I've never heard of, who's never showed up on my timeline. Yes. And also spelled Leonard Fournette wrong, I might add. So, you know, I was doing a search on the misspellings of Leonard Fournette jokes, and I came up with that one. So you got me. Jeff, let's draft our favorite Padres. 5 rounds. We'll try to go through this relatively quickly in about 7 or 8 minutes. You're my guest. You get the first San Diego Padre pick.
I get the obvious easy one. Give me Tony Gwynn. I mean, he is Mr. Padre. I mean, what more is there to say?
Okay. I think Gwynn's a pretty open and shut case. And yeah. Obviously Love a Hall him. Of Famer, a bunch of batting titles, could basically put the ball anywhere he wanted on the field, and was actually a base stealer early in his career too. I mean, he was a five-category player early in his fantasy career for anybody who got invested in the 80s. So a great pick. I'm going to go totally off the board here. I was thinking of who I was going to pick, and then it just came to me that there's one person tied to the San Diego Padres. If I didn't make the selection, it would haunt me. It would make me sad, to which I would not recover for like 2 months, as if 2020 hasn't done that already. I have to take the famous San Diego chicken.
Oh, yeah.
I love the chicken. Maybe I could have got him in the 5th round. I'm a terrible value driver. I do not do value-based drafting in these things. I just love the chicken. I think he's a riot. He I don't know. I think he's hysterical. It's hard. It's really hard to be funny when you're not allowed to talk or really change your facial expression all that much. But give me the chicken, man. It's just something. He's part of my childhood. Watching the baseball bunch. He was tied to the Chargers. He was tied to the Padres. I think the famous chicken is now in retirement. But I'm just a big fan of the chicken. What can I say?
Hey, I'm with you on that. And that's going to force me to expand my horizons a little bit there. I was kind of thinking just on the field. Don't worry, I'm not going to go take Kroc or anything like that, but Ray Kroc or anything. But I just wrote down another name for my fifth round pick. We'll see if I have the courage to take it later. But give me Dave Winfield.
Yeah.
I mean, just such an awesome player. And, you know, he gets maligned because sometimes for his New York days and Mr. May and all that, didn't have the playoff numbers as others did, but so good, just so good. And well, I love the four sport athlete too.
Was drafted in three sports, right?
Yeah.
University of Minnesota. He was I believe a basketball draft choice and a football draft choice.
Yep,
I have that right.
That's right.
Yeah. So the epitome of athlete, I don't think he ever played a day in the minors and then played into his 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So went to a lot of teams too. He had a really nice run in Toronto. I think he was there for a while. Minnesota, of course. It's always cool when somebody goes back home. You know, Winfield was just a cool player. You know, he'd run and the helmet would fly off. He'd make a lot of athletic plays. He had a big arm, or it seemed like he had a big arm. I mean, I'm sure somebody could do stat research and say that maybe he wasn't a really good defender, but it sure seemed like he was.
Yeah.
And he came up at a time when I was a baseball fan where you wouldn't see the Padres a lot, and then you'd have to like watch the All-Star game to see Dave Winfield because they weren't on the game of the week or whatever. And then it was kind of cool when he got traded to the Yankees because I felt like he got traded or signed with the Yankees, I should say, that huge contract in 1981, because it felt like he was traded more into my life. I would get to watch Red Sox Yankee games and always a Winfield fan. For my second pick, even though he's more known as an LA Dodger, I'm going to take Steve Garvey. And it just kind of for ironic reasons, I just like what Garvey symbolizes at a time when I don't think we understood baseball analysis that well. He won an MVP in 1974. He probably shouldn't have won it. If you go to Steve Garvey's Twitter account, he claims to be an NLCS MVP three times, including one year when they didn't give the award away. He's actually claiming to win an award that was not awarded, which I just think is awesome. He's had kind of a weird life, and I don't mean to kick a guy when he's down. I mean, his personal life kind of got away from him. Mm-hmm. There's the famous Rick Riley story in, I want to say, 1981 or 1982. By the way, Rick Riley used to be a great writer.
Right.
I'm not really sure what happened to him in the back nine, but he was his peak was outstanding. If anybody wants to get into Rick Riley, I'll curate a list for you. And he wrote a Steve Garvey piece that was really, including a tremendous lead to the piece. I won't say much more about that. But I don't know, Garvey, you know, he wanted to get 200 hits. He didn't walk a lot. He never had the slugging percentage over 500. It's a little bit cherry picking because I think he was 498 or 499 one season. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but he was a good player. He was around. He played every game. He had the National League games played record in a row for a long time. And I just think he just harkens back to a more innocent time where you were a baseball card or you were somebody in All-Pro Baseball Stars or the complete handbook of baseball. And as much as I love Fangraphs, as much as I love Baseball Savant, as much as I love Bill James and being smarter about the game, there's something about the naivete and the innocence when you get into baseball. And I guess Steve Garvey represents that for me.
Yeah. And plus you get the Steve Garvey is not my Padre bumper sticker, which is always
yes,
nice
you do.
Too.
Yes, you do.
And do you remember the Sklar Brothers show that was on ESPN News? And
they're hilarious. Yeah, cheap seats.
Yeah. Cheap seats. And they did the one on Garvey's show, but they went deep sea fishing or whatever and all that. That was like so awkward and humorous because of that. Yeah. Good call. Nice pull.
Shout out to the Sklars. They did a takeoff on cheap seats on Scrabble, which totally nailed the competitive Scrabble scene because they had a tournament once on ESPN, and of course they ripped it to shreds. All my Scrabble friends were all mad about it. I'm like, they're actually nailing it with the satire. They're really funny dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They are. I used to love that show. I'm going to play straight on this one here. I think this guy symbolizes the Padres too, and that's Trevor Hoffman. I mean, he's not the best pitcher for the Padres all time because I don't think a reliever can be. But, I mean, he's just so San Diego. I mean, Hell's Bells, all that. Former Red great Trevor Hoffman, once was a member of the Reds organization. But, you know, a little known fact, a minor leaguer in their organization. But, yeah, give me Trevor Hoffman.
Wow, I think you would have made more sense in the fifth round as your closing pick. But, you know, nothing, I guess you were afraid that I was going to take him. You know, that actually makes me think of somebody who I wasn't originally on my board, but I wanted to pick at least one guy on the Padres who just didn't play for the Padres very long. And so I'm going to take Gary Sheffield. Just the
on my list.
We talked about Jonathan VR, right? And we used Marlins for a month. Mike Piazza was Marlins for what, like 5 days or a week, whatever it was. Gary Sheffield had a full season in 92 and then a partial season in 93. And I think he and Hoffman were in the same trade together. I'm not convinced that's correct, but I think it is. The Backhawk. I mean, Sheffield was just a bad dude. I love the fact he came up as a shortstop.
Yeah.
I don't know. It makes me sad that he probably won't be in the Hall of Fame for some ancillary things, because I think he had a Hall of Fame career. And I just, when he was in the box, I just wanted to see him swing and hack.
There are a couple of Padres like that. He never got cheated. You always
love that cut, and loved how it's funny, because when I think about my favorite swings, most of the guys are left-handed. Like, I always thought Pujols, as great as he was, had kind of an ugly swing, or just it's not flowing. It's not rhythmic. Just things that left-handers do generally are more elegant.
Mm-hmm.
But Gary Sheffield, and there's nothing really elegant about his swing. It was just raw power. It was just, you know, a force of nature. I don't know. I just always loved that dude. And I like the fact that he was in San Diego briefly. So you kind of forget about it. Then you see him in a Padre uniform and he looks weird. I actually find that endearing. I think that's more feature than bug. So give me Gary Sheffield in the third round.
One of the best all-time seasons for the Padres. Yeah, he was on my list. In fact, I have a similar one later, but it we'll see. Maybe it'll go into honorable mention. But all right, but I'm going to go with a guy that was an MVP for the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
Started also, he is the start of changing the discussion on PEDs in baseball, and that's Ken Caminiti. But one of the reasons I love him too, though, was his defense. I mean, such a huge arm over there. He'd make that play behind third base. You think the guy's got a hit, and zip, that ball would come across the diamond so fast. I know there are players with better careers with the Padres than Ken Caminiti, because he spent so much of his time with Houston, but he had an MVP there. He was an incredible year. He had one incredible year there and a number of other very good ones. So give me Ken Caminiti, and give me like just the enduring impact.
Yeah, it probably really helped him to get him out of the Astrodome, which was like hitting in a wine cellar.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Jack Murphy Stadium at the time and obviously has that monster year in the late 90s. Also, if you watch the Arliss episode that they did on fantasy baseball, Ken Caminiti is featured in that. They really do a good job on that. Say what you want about Arliss. Not everybody likes that show, but they nailed fantasy.
They really got it right. I loved
Arliss.
And, you know, he actually hosted a show on SiriusXM Fantasy for a while. Nice guy.
I remember hearing you on the
show a couple of times.
I remember hearing you on his show and thinking, you know, Wool gets fantasy. He gets – I thought you guys had a good connection for somebody you probably didn't know that well when you talked to him. I remember being in the car and listening to that segment and thinking – I was actually wanting to give him a compliment, say I enjoyed the show, but I don't think he had a Twitter account. I don't think he's on social media, which – for all I know, maybe we're all like 15 years behind Robert Wool on that one. But
yeah,
I remember that show and I remember you being good on it. And certainly that Arliss episode on Roto was fantastic. So I like the Caminiti pick there.
Trades away one of his clients just to win his league. That's awesome.
Right, yeah, trades him out of the league. It was like the Jonathan VR. You know, he's going to cost me the league, so I'll trade him to Toronto so he no longer counts in the National League. It's freaking awesome. I love that somebody would do that. And then the Frozen – and Steve Garvey's in that episode too. He's one of the league owners. And Brendan Tartikoff says, yeah, you're the first guy I bought. I got you for $3. And Garvey's like, I was a steal. He's like, no, you suck that year. Anyway, it's a good episode. Go back and see it if you can. Arliss, it's on the DVD. I'm going to take Bruce Hurst, who I just take in all these drafts. We did a Red Sox draft on your great Sirius radio program. I should have mentioned earlier, and we'll give you a chance to do some plugs on the way out. We did a Red Sox draft. I drafted Hurst. We drafted curveball pitchers a few drafts ago on this show. I drafted Hurst, and now I'm going to take him as a Padre.
Nice.
Of course, more known as a Red Sox player, but he had that great sweeping curveball. He came up at the time. Him and Clemens were kind of contemporaries, and I know Clemens was better. He was always better than Bruce Hurst, but I always preferred Hurst. I found him more enjoyable to watch. I thought he was just an easier guy to like. He was actually named the 1986 World Series MVP. Had the Red Sox closed out Game 6. He would have been the MVP. And then he was actually sailing along with a 3-0 lead in Game 7. And he was pitching on short rest. He got tired. The Mets got to him, I think, in the sixth inning. But Bruce Hurst was really fun. And that sweeping curveball was just he'd get ahead in the count. And you knew it was coming. And he would freeze guys. I love watching that guy pitch.
I loved him, too. Should have had a better postseason legacy, but for certain things that happened in 1986. Mm-hmm. We don't need to revisit that. Good pick. I like that. All right, Last one. All right. Do I play this straight and just go with the best available pitcher, best available player, or do I go with intrinsic value? That's the tough part. I think I'm just going to go Jake Peavy. I'm going to play it straight. I think that, he had a really fantastic career with the Padres. Thought about Randy Jones, thought about a couple other guys. I won't pollute the pool entirely there, but point is, he had a really strong career. It burned out quickly, quicker than it should, but man, a couple of really big seasons, a Cy Young in there. You know, he is fundamentally a Padre, had a couple of years with the White Sox and had the Steve Carlton path at the end, but yeah, I really good Padres career.
Decent pick. He was certainly on my board. Not sure which way to go. Randy Jones, I loved because he would just pick up the ball and throw it, and he would throw junk. And, Pete Rose would try to hit right-handed against him and left-handed because he couldn't figure Jones out, and people would get mad when he would beat them. He won a Cy Young in the 70s. Jack Clark, for a lot of the reasons I picked Sheffield, I just like what Clark would take his hacks and would be very open. Another guy who Rick Riley profiled in Sports Illustrated, by the way, he did a great article on Jack Clark near the end of his career. Phil Plantier is a guy I had some intersection with. We're both Pawtucket Red Sox. He was a player. I was a writer. Had that great sit-down stance. Yeah, I'm going to go with Plantier. I have some history with him. He had, if you like batting stance guy, he's one of my favorite Twitter follows. He does a great Plantier. So I'll take him in the fifth round. I also considered Greg Nettles, who's just one of the funniest players of all time. He was in that Springsteen video, too, at least mentioned in that Springsteen Glory Days video, which is kind of cool. And Kevin Brown probably should have been the 1998 Cy Young winner. Glavine won it. Hoffman was second. Mm-hmm. Brown had better stats than either one of them, if you believe the metrics. Certainly had better numbers than Glavine. Kind of apples and oranges with Hoffman and Brown. But another player who was in San Diego very briefly. So I considered him as well, but we'll go with Plantier. I just want to give you one other hot take. I'm going to predict that Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to end his career with more WAR than Tony Gwynn. And therefore, if he stays with the Padres, he'll actually be the best player in Padres history. Now, he may become a free agent, go somewhere else. I don't know. But he started so young. He's obviously off to such a monster start. I think he's going to have more WAR at the end of his career than Gwynn.
I think that's a great take, and I think you did a good job of preempting everybody that's yelling at us. How come you didn't take Tatis? Now you mentioned it at least. Kevin Brown, best by WAR season of any pitcher in Padres history. That was the only year he's with the Padres. But fine sight. Adrian Gonzalez, worth a mention. Mm-hmm. It's funny that he was a guy that was a number one overall pick that was traded without any fanfare to the Padres, really. They kind of just gave up on him. And then he had that great career. And he actually was worse in Boston than he was in San Diego, which is odd. One other intrinsic value, Don Orsillo. I love listening to Orsillo do games for the Padres.
Me too.
They get a little goofy at times, but that's okay. I mean, for many years, that's all you had. It was great. And there's a big contrast between their TV crew and their radio crew. I'm not a big Ted Leitner fan. I am a big Orsillo fan.
You mentioned Orsillo. I wish I had made I could have made a combination. I cheat on these drafts all the time. I could have taken Orsillo and Dick Enberg together. Remember that near the end of Dick Enberg's career, he was the Padres guy. And Enberg was an announcer who I liked for a long time. And then it just seemed like he was so ubiquitous. I kind of got sick of him for a while. And then I realized, wait a minute, Dick Enberg's really good. And then I got to enjoy while Vin Scully was having his victory lap, of several years in LA. I will never forgive the Dodgers for denying people Vin Scully victory laps. That still makes me mad to this day. But it got to the point where it's like, okay, I got Vin Scully, I got Dick Enberg, both really high level at the end of their careers, and in good health to Vinny, by the way. He's 92 right now. We lost Enberg a couple of years ago, but both great announcers. And Orsillo, as you said, I'm a Red Sox fan. Mm-hmm. I thought McDonough and Remy were great. I thought Orsillo and Remy were great. And the fact that they ran McDonough out of town and they ran Orsillo out of town, I will never not be mad about that. And there's nothing wrong with Dave O'Brien or the people they have on now. I like Eckersley. I've always liked Remy. But the way they treated McDonough and Orsillo, I'm always going to be frustrated about that.
Same.
Well, I hope we treated Jeff Erickson well today. Again, he's one of my best friends in the industry and a man of all seasons. His work over at RotoWire. Jeff, tell us what you're up to these days and where they can keep up with you.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to do my first value meter of the year for football, where I rank players by position for the given week, and people can yell at me because if you want to encourage people to comment, put a list together there, but do a ranking list, as you well know. But no, it's fun. Looking forward to that. Got a lot of drafts going on. Doing the SiriusXM show. It's almost all football these days, but that's okay. I'm on Twitter where I'm almost all baseball, at Jeff_Erickson. And you can hit me up on the site. We have a free 10-day trial for listeners, rotowire.com/free, and no credit card or anything like that. Hopefully you like it, want to subscribe. We talk baseball there too. I've got 3 podcasts a week talking baseball. So lots of different ways to get too much Jeff.
Yeah, lots of good people over at RotoWire. Just some of my best friends in the industry over there. And they had a lot to do with me getting a foothold in this industry. So I will always be appreciative of that. I believe the XM show is 12 to 2 Eastern, Monday through Friday.
That is our new time.
Okay. So Jeff and Chris Liss, his regular co-host, they do a great job on that show. And if you not sick of me already, I actually have a regular Thursday spot with those guys. And Dalton Daldon, my colleague, is on as well. So again, this has been the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast. Remember, we have 5 days a week, Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast, which is a podcast and a forecast. All 5 of your favorite Yahoo personalities have a show. I'm the Sunday night, Monday morning release guy. Andy Behrens, Liz Loza, Matt Harmon, Dalton Daldon. We all have a day. We have a lot of exciting stuff, some new stuff planned for the NFL season. So make sure you check out that. Of course, we have this baseball podcast, which I'm very proud of. I want to say thanks again to Jeff. Thanks again to Raghu, our producer in California, keeping us on the air and sounding great. I am Scott. That's our show. Go Padres. We're out.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.